session number 17358, reel 3.
Mr. Flanagan, reel 3. When the military police, US military police, hit them, did they hit them in any particular part of the body?
No, just anywhere.
On the head?
Anywhere. On the head, yes.
How did the Royal Neighbours police behave?
You never saw them, to be honest. You were detailed off to become a shore patrol. So if you went in, they were your mates. So if they said there was a fight at the Takamazuka, you went somewhere else. And then you rolled up when it was all over and said, what's going on here, you know.
So there wasn't a professional body of policemen,
no,
like the military police?
No, not in these places. In Hong Kong there would be. Singapore there would be. But not in... not in Nagasaki and Sasebo, places like that.
Did you ever have to act as a policeman?
Yes, once.
In Sasebo?
No, it was in Kure. Kure was the Australians. Australians were based in Kure. Sasebo was the Americans. Kure was Americans and Australians. Mainly Australians, Kure, and we had a marvellous time there with the Aussies. We got along great at that particular time. I think they've turned against us since then, haven't they? But in those days we were brothers, very friendly with one another. Played cricket against them and football and rugby and all those. I think that's when I got my shoulder sprung against the Australians. Football, so we enjoyed the Aussies. You know, they were very good guys.
These were Australian sailors, were they?
Army. Yeah, I saw a programme on the television about the occupation forces of Japan after the war. Being in it, you didn't realise how dangerous it was. I mean, you were going in to police a defeated nation, and I didn't realise that until I shot it, and it sort of put it into perspective. At any time we could have been killed, any of us. It was you can imagine the Germans in here policing us, you know, if they'd have taken England. I don't think we would have ever have sat back, would we? You know. and for the Japanese to allow us to police them. And it was only that sort of put it into perspective for me, and how dangerous it was. And to us, like, it was just a great adventure, and we were seeing all these wonderful places.
Did you ever have any trouble from Japanese people?
Not at all, not at all. But, you know, the possibility was there. Because they're fanatical when they start, aren't they? No, I had a marvellous time and went to Tokyo. It was American. And they had a big nightclub called the Grand Cherry in Tokyo. And that was... again, they hired these dancing girls, and they were, you know, when you've been at sea for a long time and you come in and all these girls in evening dresses, they look marvellous, and they're beautiful anyway when they're young, but they are purely to dance with or sit with and talk to, you know. It's just having a girl to talk to for a little while or to dance with. But the Americans always overpriced everything. So for us to go in there, it was a special treat. I mean, they used it like a naffy club, but for us it was a very special treat.
So what was the method of payment then?
Yen.
But did you pay to go in, or did you pay...
Oh yes.
...to have a dance or something?
Oh yes, you bought tickets. They were taxi girls. So you could buy a roll of tickets and just give them to the girl and sit talking to her if you wanted to. Or you could dance all those tickets away.
And it was called the Grand Cherry?
Yes.
Is it a hotel?
Oh, I would imagine it must have been, yes.
Did anything more serious develop with these dancing partners?
Not that I know of. I know we weren't in Tokyo all that long, you know, sort of flying visits. Possibly a week and they'll be away again. We went to a place called Okidate and we had a big regatta. All the ships of the... a lot of the ships of the fleet came along for a regatta, you know. Rowing and swimming, football, boxing, you know. And we asked the Americans for the facilities. And they go over the top, you know. They built stands and everything for us to play football and... They came in and with a display of paratroops, popcorn and hot dogs and hamburgers and, but hospitality absurd, you know, absolutely wonderful, everything over the top. The Yanks.
Is this their army or navy?
This was the army.
In Tokyo.
Yes. No, in Yokodate. Yokodate. It was a big bay, and we have a cock of the fleet, and when you come into port, if you're the champion of anything, you put your cock up, and it's literally a cock, cut out cock, and you send it to the top of the mast, and everybody challenges you to whatever you're the champion at. If it's football, then you get lots of challenges for a football match. But sports-wise, you can't beat the forces. It was absolutely marvellous.
Nowadays, we hear about these homosexual bars and transvestite bars and so on in Southeast Asia. Was there anything of that kind in those days, or is that a new phenomenon?
So it's a new phenomenon. They were there. The only incident I remember was that we went into the Fleet Club, and I'm having a meal in the Fleet Club in Hong Kong, and this perfume, wow, I said, who's that? And this little fella said, it's me. Back to my dinner. But that's the only... They used to be...
What was he, European or Chinese?
Eurasian.
A civilian?
Yes, yeah.
He was just looking for a sailor.
And then you think, well, what are you doing? How did he get in here, you know? But there used to be a cruise line called the Prinz Lines, P-R-I-N-Z, American Lines. And they were full of queers or homosexuals. And they used to come ashore en bloc looking for sailors. Something that I personally just cannot accept.
Did you get homosexuality in the Navy, though, aboard ship?
Only once did I see any, and we had him thrown off the ship. You know, we got cut to all the chief petty officer, don't want him on our mess deck, you know, get rid of him. And I think he had to go live in the sick bay until they eventually got rid of him, because they create great problems on a ship.
Because some people have told me about some system of an older seaman pairing up with a boy seaman. Well, it's a winger system.
Yeah.
Had you heard of that?
Yes, I have. But I had an incident when I came into barracks one time, and I'd been ashore, and I came in, and there was a young boy in his hammock and an older sailor interfering with him, and I made a mess of him because I don't like it. I thought it's not natural, and I'm absolutely against it.
What exactly was he doing?
He had him trapped in his hammock with his hand, you know, probably up his bottom, you know, and the lad's crying, and as I came through the door, I spotted him, and I just grabbed him and hit him one. You know, we had a fight.
Where was this?
This was in Devonport Barracks. But on ships, I mean, I had an older friend and guardian, if you like, a lad called Scouse Chambers, who steered me along, kept me out of trouble. He was the world's worst. He'd been a leading stoker 4 times and lost his hoop 4 times, so he was a bit of a scallywag, but he kept me out of trouble. They see things that we don't see, you know. They've been around, and they know where trouble is and what to do and how to get out of it without getting involved in it. So I had this friend, and he, when I got wounded, he went mad, absolutely stark raving mad. If he could have fired a gun, he'd have fired a gun, you know. But he was just a friend, a footballing mate, drinking mate, you know, a shore pal, oppo, whatever it is.
You called each other oppos?
Oh, yeah.
What is oppo short for?
I have no idea. It's just a friend. My opposite is it was just wise, street wise, you know, navy wise.
Now, can you take me a bit further in what happened to the consort?
Yep. The ships used to go, you're talking to Yangtze now.
Anything.
We've veered all over the place, haven't we? I mean, we went to on the southern cruise, going back to the very beginning again, and we went to Vietnam, and that was full of French Foreign Legion, and we had an American nurses, and we had a marvellous period with them, and then we moved on to Singapore, to Malaya, and we heard that the nurses were leaving, and they went to the planes, and they were all killed before they got aboard the planes by the Viet Cong, as they eventually called. They were communists when we were there, you know.
These were American nurses in
Vietnam. Yes.
French Indochina.
Yeah. It was just a great place. It was just an oriental place, you know.
Which town was this? Saigon?
Saigon, yes. Yeah. There was the London, the Alacrity, Consort, and the Black Swan went up on this cruise, just showing the flag.
Did you come under fire in Vietnam?
No. It was a peace. As far as we knew, you know, we knew there was communist problems throughout sort of the East, from the Chinese communists that they were infiltrating into all the other places, Cambodia, Vietnam, Malaya, Borneo.
And did you have any contact with the French Foreign Legion?
Oh yes, yeah. And they couldn't speak any language, you know. They spoke their own language, so it was strange conversations we had with them. But they were hard men, if you like. They were the rabble of the world.
Was there any tension with them?
No. Just they used to just try and get you drunk. Just take you in and drink. You drink. Drink. That's all you got from them. Yeah, they were great fun. You know, they would start singing and they all different songs. It was a nice experience with them. And then when I heard later on about DMB and Foo, you know, that was quite... thinking maybe some of those lads were there. But we had no problems with the French Foreign Legion lads. They were just soldiers. We went to Manila, and that was... we were the guests of the 7 millionaires, British millionaires in Manila. And they threw a big party for us at the Polo Club, which was excellent, you know. And beer, hot dogs, hamburgers, you name it, all the usual trimmings. We were only allowed to take ashore $3 there. You can imagine, $3 American. We didn't go very far for us, so we couldn't do very much. But they were interesting places to visit, and different cultures. I mean, that was very Americanized. Malaya was very Oriental, and so was Vietnam. Was sort of ancient culture, if you like. There was nothing built up like there is today. We sort of tied up along on the main dock road, and the city was there, you know. It was quite incredible. Sort of drove up, went up the river and tied up on the wall, and the city's right in front of you, you know. It was quite a remarkable place. But it was ancient, you know. We went to all the old relics of the past, the Buddhas all over the place, you know. That was an interesting day out. They used to take us on trips, just, you know, like we did. We went to see Hiroshima and things like that. They'd take us out on trips, interest trips. They took us in Malaya one time. Took us pig hunting, you know, wild boar hunting, and they gave us spears to shake the bushes.
In Manila.
In Malaya.
Malaya.
And you imagine that when one of those comes flying out, we had no idea what we were doing. A wild boar come flying out, and you finish up. You're at the back of the queue after that, you know. You shake the bush. I'm not going.
Which place did you like best?
Japan.
Why?
I like the the colours, the trees. I went out on a trip with four Australian soldiers. I said I would like to see a tea house, and they took me out in this jeep and took me to this tea house in the middle of a tiered garden. It was absolutely picturesque. You know, all the colours and absolutely wonderful. A beautiful place.
Now, can you tell me about going into the Yangtze?
Yeah. Yeah, the ships, Australian and British, used to do a guard ship in Nanking. So there'd be a lot of ships in Shanghai, but one ship would go to Nanking as a guard ship for the embassies. And that's what we were doing. We were the guard ship for the embassies, and it's a terrible job. There's nothing there. You're not allowed ashore. The only place you can go is there's a little bar that they'd made inside an egg packing compound, a football field, and that was your entertainment, apart from what you do for yourself. So we had a month of boredom. Occasionally we were invited to one of the embassies for a meal, you know, a party of us, and I went to the Canadian embassy again. A very memorable experience for me, you know, going in amongst and in the embassies they invited from all the other embassies, sort of, and you meet Italians, Germans, well, not German, Italians, French, Chinese, all the nationalities, and it was a very interesting time talking to these people, you know, Americans. It was all experiences that you'll never have again, you know. It's been, I just thoroughly enjoyed it all the time, you know. Anyway, we were there.
But you said it was a terrible job in Nanking.
Oh yeah, it was boring. There was nothing there for you to do. You weren't allowed into the city. Yeah. The only place you had was the little bar and a football field. We stood guard on this egg packing station, so people didn't break in and steal anything. And apart from that, it was just a boring time, you know. And you were there for a month, so that month seemed forever. And while we were there, we were watching the Chinese army building up on the other side of the river, and we're thinking, how are we going to get out of here whenever they come, you know? And we were told our time was up and the Amethyst was on its way to relieve us. So on the 20th of April I was getting fresh water in for the ship, and the chief petty officer, or two, an officer, a naval officer from the British embassy, came to talk to our captain, and they were standing on the jetty talking, and I was just getting fresh water, and it was just two officers talking, and the next thing, he went aboard and the chief petty officer came down and asked me to put steam on the capstan so they could raise the anchor, and I said, we haven't taken the water in yet, chief. And he come out with a mouthful, which he never did, you know, just, it was, you'd bloody well told. And it's very, very unlike Peddler Palmer. He was very gentlemanly man. So it took me back about that. He doesn't usually speak like that. So I said, what's the matter? He said, just do as you're told. So I said, okay. So I went, disconnected the water pipe and went and put steam onto the capstan. Went up onto the capstan. And they're trying to get the anchor up, and I said, they haven't got the steam on it yet properly. You've got, hang on a minute. And the skipper's shouting from the bridge, get a move on, get a move on. So I was saying, what the hell's up? What's going on? Don't know. So eventually we cleared the anchor, and off he is, he's away. And we we were doing 27 knots down the Yangtze. Imagine that, 27 knots. And it filtered through that the Amethyst was under fire. And really, we couldn't believe it. We sort of said, oh, no, don't believe this. So we going about our normal jobs, and they piped up spirits about an hour earlier than it normally was. What's going on? So it's not 11 o'clock. We went, had our tot, and then Anne's to dinner just shortly afterwards. What's going on? So we had sandwiches, actually, you know, which we didn't normally have. Corned beef sandwiches. And then we're just powering down, and we're all sort of on the upper deck watching these bow waves sweeping up onto the banks of the Yangtze, and little blokes fishing and boats finishing up on the dry land, you know, just, and we were really motoring down the Yangtze. And it was a lovely day, very much like today, sun shining, very pleasant, and we were on this ship really tearing down the Yangtze. Oh, brilliant, this. And then suddenly we heard the shells go, then another, but we were travelling so fast that they couldn't get any range on us. And as we rounded the bend of the river, there was a building on the bank full of troops, and they're leaning out of windows shooting rifles at us, and they're running down the beaches shooting at us, you know. And the skipper brought the four guns round, and as we went past this building, he went poof, and the building just collapsed, and we were out of range in no time, and it went quiet again. And then we passed the Amethyst, and it took us a while to stop, you know. I mean, doing that sort of speed, we had to stop, turn round and come back. And as we were coming back to the Amethyst, we signalled that we were going to, could they take a line? And they said yes. So we moved into position and went astern to present the stern to take the line. And we stopped. And they hit us with everything. They were lined up on the Amethyst, the guns, and they just brought them to bear on us, onto both ships, actually. And the Amethyst had wounded along the decks, so we were bringing fire onto their wounded. They hit us just below the waterline, and the chief PO took me down below. But we were drawing so much fire on the Amethyst and these wounded on the deck that we had to pull away until they got the wounded out of the way. And then we went and tried to knock out the shore batteries, which we did. The ones we could see, we knocked out. We were steaming up and down the river by a little island called Rose Island, and turning there and coming back, until we knocked out all these guns that were visible for us.